Brendan O'Connor on RTE Radio 1 with Allcare Pharmacy. Get expert advice from your friendly healthcare team at Allcare Pharmacy, Ireland's largest community pharmacy network.
I'm delighted to welcome back to the show now writers Róisín and Anne Ingle. Good afternoon, guys. Welcome
Hello.
Back.
Hi.
Thank you.
Now, guys, look, I'm going to be straight, right? I don't know if we can keep saying this mother and daughter agony aunts thing anymore.
No.
Like, I mean, the conceit was thin enough to begin with, but... But, like, we're not solving anyone's problems here, let's face it. I think it's more like random life-affirming ideas. Is that more,
that sounds great.
We're doing?
And so, the random is really the key word.
Yeah. So I was thinking, would we reframe you as with the opposite of agony, ecstasy ants?
Oh,
kind of
I love it.
So
I
it's more like positive stuff than dealing with the negative.
Okay. Grand.
But you are primarily writers, I know. And I believe you're in the middle of writing a book. Did you write a book before? You don't like to talk about it, I know. You never mention it.
But you never mention it. No one can come past the house without I give them a copy. Yes, I did, of course, Brendan, open-hearted. But this time I'm writing a book about being old. And it all started when I read this book by this Korean man. And it said, the title of the book was, if you're going to live to 100, you might as well be happy. And it was, fair enough, it was a book, but it was very much about the Korean kind of culture. And he was a professor and all that. So it wasn't really speaking to me that much. But it gave me the idea that, you know, people in Ireland might like to know how I feel about being old and what I have to say about being old. So I'm writing a book. So all during, like, from... like December to January and right up until now I've been writing away.
Okay. What kind of stuff?
Well, there's all sorts of stuff then. It's all about like not to be sad or anything, but people, you know, die when you're getting old. Your address book just kind of just got crosses all over it. And it's remembering people in a very special way, that kind of thing. But I also I have a whole essay on dieting because dieting has been a big part of my life.
Really?
Yes. From the age of 10. And
how did it start at the age of 10?
With half a dexedrine tablet and a lot of carrots. You know, that's...
And why did it start at the age of 10?
Because I wasn't exactly bullied. I wasn't ever bullied because I was always very popular everywhere I went. To this day. To this day, friend. No, seriously, I was popular in school, but I was teased because of my weight. I was overweight as a child and I had a nickname, Tugboat Annie, you know, so... my father was very fond of me and he said, oh, we have to do something about this. Can't have Anne being called names. So took me to the doctor and I got this half a little yellow dexedrine tablet.
So the doctors were doling out slimming tablets to kids in those days.
It's a long way ago, you know.
Yeah.
75 years ago. But anyway, that's how it started. And then it's been a roller coaster of up and downness ever since then. And, you know, it's the shame of being fat and it's the shame of dieting all the time that is really bugs me. You know, I'm not lazy and I'm not greedy, but I'm fat. That's the way it is. And I've tried to combat that. And I have a pair of scales in my bathroom hidden behind the toilet because it's very important not to let anybody be contaminated by my malady, which it's a disease.
You still weigh yourself all the time?
I do.
Every day?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
and has your whole life, so have you either been kind of on some kind of a diet?
Or pregnant.
Okay.
I never dieted when I was pregnant.
And listen, when you look back on it all now, was any of it worth it?
No. Not one of those books I bought, not one of those... little foodie things that I used to buy, you know, those little pop small things that you put in the microwave. Not that I ever have a microwave, but you know that. None of it. None of it worked. None of it works. None of it works.
You just waste your whole life kind of denying yourself in
Jesus,
a way like
Brenda,
not waste your whole life,
waste
but like
my whole bloody life.
An element of denial or judging yourself for enjoying things.
Yes, yes. You know, like looking at a cream cake and saying I shouldn't eat it and eating it anyway. You know what I mean? It's just...
you could have just skipped the kind of guilt bit and just eaten it and enjoyed
it. Yeah, it would have been better. That would have
same
been
end result.
Exactly. No, but so you see, it's one of the things that... I think it's important to talk about it because we don't talk about it. But I'm ashamed of it and I would never let any of my grandchildren want to do that. You know,
are you ashamed of the dieting?
I am ashamed.
Were you always ashamed, kind of?
Well, sometimes if it worked, I was not ashamed. Oh, yeah. I mean, when I left my husband that time, I was away for 3 months and I lost an awful lot of weight then, with tablets and with distress and with grief. And when I came back then, my mother-in-law didn't even know me. But then, from then on, I had two more children. You know, I just felt it was an important thing to talk about. And the same way as death is an important thing to talk about.
Yeah. There's something terribly sad about it, though.
It is sad. It is sad.
Not death, like the
well,
the,
death is sad too, but I mean, dieting is nearly worse than death.
So, Roisin, were you aware then growing up that...
Yeah, I mean, I remember these books in the house. Like, I remember Dr. Scarsdale particularly, and that was a really punitive kind of calorie-reducing thing. And I definitely feel, and we've talked about this, so I don't think you feel, I don't want you to feel bad, but that influenced my, because it's something I've struggled with all my life as well, overeating, food, dieting, that kind of thing. And I definitely, you would have been modelling a sort of thing that said, we need to be less, we need to have diets. And I know that you don't like to hear that, but you did loads of mostly everything else you did as a parent was amazing.
Thanks, Roisin.
But you weren't aware you didn't know, Mum, that having that, and it's just, you're totally right about the weighing scales, like, and I don't talk about stuff like that with my children. I know that, you know, that's what we don't do now. We don't try and make people feel bad about their bodies and all of that. But we didn't understand then. So you
no,
don't have to
and
feel
I,
bad.
I don't think Anne is alone. There's a generational thing there, isn't there? Richard Hogan mentions it a lot when he's in here, that there is a generational thing where it was okay for previous generations to kind of, they thought, and like you say, your dad loved you a lot, like.
Yeah. He loved me so much that he gave me dexedrine tablets.
But did you go out dancing all night to Northern Soul music? Wasn't that was where dexedrine was mainly used, wasn't it, on the Wigan Pier and the Northern Soul
you know,
club scene?
My mum came over to me recently to show me what she's done so far of this, I have to say, amazing book, if there's any publishers listening and are interested. But one of the things that made me very sad about this essay that she has about lifetime of dieting was that she had a diary entry when you were 80 recording your weight and talking about what you're going to eat and stuff like that. It just made me very sad that, you know, you can't get your old age and just feel like, you know, I can have that cream cake and not feel bad and I am who I am. And you're probably the body shape you're supposed to be, Mum, aren't you?
Well, this is what I've come to the conclusion, Brendan. I now, I don't eat after my dinner. We usually have dinner at 6 in our house and I eat nothing till my breakfast the next morning. And that is all I do in the way of dieting. I'm using inverted commas here. That is all I do. And my weight has stayed the same. I'm overweight. You know, that's me. And this is what I am. And I've kind of come to terms with it now. But still, that weighing scales gets pulled out from behind the toilet, you know? I mean, look.
And it will affect how you feel for the day if you're up a bit or down a bit.
Yes,
yeah,
Brendan.
Yeah.
I'm a flawed.
Look, a lot of us know that story, like, and it is we know it's a ridiculous way to live.
I'd have be able to stop when I was the 3 stone lighter. That would have been great, but it didn't work like
that.
But anyway, the rest of the book is happy and, well, telling a lot about what it's like, because people actually, or younger people, do not have any comprehension of what it's like to be old. You know, there's so many
And we
things.
Think we never will be either.
Oh, absolutely.
We will be if we're lucky, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely. You never think that you're going to go old. But even today, like my grandchild pointed out this old age spot that came on my arm, like out of nowhere. And I said, oh my God, you'll have those one day. And she looked at me as if she's a beautiful little 12-year-old.
Yeah.
She looks at me as if I was mad. But, you
know. Is it hard getting old?
Well, it's no joke, you know, because there's always something going on with your body that you weren't expecting. But I think you just have to have the acceptance of that and a positive attitude to keep going, you know?
Yeah.
It's not easy.
And come here, so you're living in the house with Roisin's sister and their kids there and everything as well. Would you be inclined to be nearly making remarks around weight and...
Katie, my daughter, would be very cross if I did that. In our house, there's no good or bad food. You know, you don't make remarks about anything. Whatever you get, you eat it, and that is it. And I would never. Oh my goodness!
You've learned. Mm.
I think a lot
of grandparents have learned not to make those remarks.
Yes, don't make remarks.
You know. Roisin, you're allowed to pass remarks when it's about yourself. So. I kind of hesitate to bring this up, but you did it yourself.
Okay.
So, yeah. You were promoting your post-cancer hair to the boxing promoter Don King's hair recently, and you did have photos and all, and it was pretty funny.
I mean, there is a remarkable similarity between me and Don King at the moment. My hair just decided to grow vertical, and it's still growing up, so I'm kind of fascinated to see when it's going to stop or if it's going to stop. But it was very funny because the Irish Times put in a composite picture of me and Don King, like almost separated at birth kind of scenario, and it was quite similar. But I still feel I'm rocking the hair. I'm feeling quite good about it. Mothers on hair is not a good thing. The other day she said to me, yes, are you going to do something about your hair? You know the way.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
then she's like,
she's not fully over the,
no, she's
the remarks.
The,
at
the
all,
hair
like,
shaming
yeah.
is real.
Yeah.
And she says,
she feels that's the new acceptable form of fat shaming.
She goes to me, she said, it's very distracting, is what she said.
Okay.
I know, so that's her trying to be nice about it. But no, I mean, post-cancer treatment hair, because obviously I still have cancer on my bones and I'm getting treatment for that.
Yeah.
No, it's fine. But it was very interesting because Katie Hannon then had my hairdresser on Liveline, and a whole load of women came on and talked about their experiences after cancer treatment, because it is a very real thing and hair means a lot to people. But I have let go of my amazing, long, beautiful hair that I had, and I'm in this other phase of my life, and I'm grand with it, actually. And it does make me laugh. The whole point of that article was I feel funny about my hair, because when I look at myself in the mirror, sometimes I do just laugh because it's funny.
And listen, I'm sure you get sick of being asked this now at this stage, but you obviously had a huge impact on people when you spoke so beautifully, I suppose is the word here, to us about your cancer in January, and you wrote that very powerful piece in the Irish Times over that Christmas. And so people will be wondering, how are you?
I'm doing really well. I get my treatment in the Mater Public Hospital, big shout out to them because they're incredible, all the nurses there, and I go every 3 weeks to get my immunotherapy. It's an injection, and I'm on a couple of other tablets, and I go to my doctor to get another injection. So I'm getting treatment, but it's not a treatment that so far anyway has major side effects, so I'm feeling really well.
And you live in between that?
Oh yeah, so I have. I live, and then I have.
Certainly does.
I have scans every 3 months, and they sort of will tell you then. You know, the hope is that it stays stable, that it doesn't move anywhere else, that it's not doing anything, and so I don't think about that scan until maybe the day before. And then I might have a little think of, curiously almost, oh, I wonder what they're going to say. But I couldn't live, for me personally, I couldn't live by under a cloud in between those scans. Some people talk about it as living scan to scan. And I don't really feel like that, because I have no control over it. It's going to do what it does, and I just have to deal with whatever happens. So that's the kind of way that I deal with it myself.
Yeah, that's remarkable equanimity.
No, it's great. I'm very lucky to be able to feel like that. You know, it doesn't mean that there haven't been sort of profound changes. You know, I've actually gone back to therapy recently, because I was in counselling before any of this happened, just for various life things that you need to deal with. And I've went back recently, and I was talking yesterday to my therapist about how my relationship is with the cancer. And it's an interesting one, because obviously if you said to me, okay, you have a choice, it can go or it will stay, I'm obviously going to choose not to have cancer. But at the same time, I don't want to be in a kind of war with myself or a war with my body. The cancer is in my body, it's there, and I don't want to hate myself in any way, and that's very important for me. So there's a really interesting kind of philosophical relationship that I have with this disease, that isn't necessarily I hate you, get out of me, or why did this happen to me, because for me to live a peaceful life, that's not useful. So I'm living that kind of profound thing.
So the relationship with it is what then?
Well, it's kind of like I know it's there, and I'm not having an antagonistic get out of me relationship. I suppose like other parts of ourselves, you know, there's parts of ourselves that make us do things that we know aren't as good. And you're better off not being at war with that part, because it's not going to make things better. Like I mean, God, don't get too deep about it. But you know the way we all have we all have a bit of an inner child, right? Where it's maybe something like my dad killed himself when I was 8. So there's a part of me that's still that 8-year-old that I'm trying to appease all the time. She wants to kind of go and comfort herself with food or with other things. And I'm in a relationship now. My adult self is in a relationship with that child, saying, you know, I've got this. I can drive this car. You don't need to do it. You just sit there and enjoy yourself. I'm an adult now and I can deal with these things. And I suppose it's a little bit like that with the cancer. I'm just like letting it be there, but I'm trying to be in control mentally of what's okay. going on. I mean, it might all sound a bit mad to people, but no, I suppose we all find all. Our ways to cope. You know?
Okay, and so just on that little diversion you took there, the 8-year-old?
Yeah.
Is the 8-year-old kind of okay now? That 8-year-old feels held.
Well, that's what I'm trying to do, safe. Actually. And actually, yeah. getting the cancer has helped me do that more. I've more motivation to be, as I said, at peace. So I'm actually finding this relationship with that 8-year-old much more deeper now. And actually, funny that you use the word held, because yesterday that's what it was. I really felt like I was putting my arms around myself and saying, it's okay, I'm going to be able to deal with this, and I don't need to so go off and eat crap food to comfort myself, or I don't need to, you know, binge watch a million episodes or something. You know, the things that we do to distract ourselves from yeah. some kind of inner pain that might be going on. So I actually feel grateful in some ways to this diagnosis, because it's given me a bit more of a deeper understanding of myself and trying to deal with some of the things that I've struggled with for a long time. So it's, again, like I'm saying, obviously I wish I didn't have cancer. I'm not being facetious in that way. But yeah. I also have to acknowledge all the incredible things that have happened to me since I got this as well. And how I do think in some ways it's making me a better person and the person, or more whole person, let's say. So, yeah.
Wow.
That's what's going on for me.
Great.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm kind of semi in bits here, Anne, but I'm also thinking you must be so proud of her.
I am. It makes life so much easier for me to know that she is the way she is and the way she feels about what's going on for her. Yes, it's something we've come to terms with, the two yeah. of us.
But if only my hair wasn't so distracting.
Yeah, that's just, it. That's yeah, a bit, yeah. that bothers
you can,
me.
You can't, you can't let that go, can no, you? And imagine if you could annoying. Let that go, Anne. Yeah. If you could have some of Roisin's equanimity yeah. and just go, look, it's okay. It's okay. Tell your inner 8-year-old, Anne. Tell her it's okay.
Oh,
so listen,
God.
Yeah, you went back to work then, Roisin, with a bang.
Yes.
You said then you were resuming your column. The column. You do the terrific big interview. You're doing the women's podcast.
Yes.
But like everybody, I was waiting to see, so what the first column would be, and I was kind of expecting The Meaning of Life, or maybe something like you just did there. It was about making your bed. You went yeah. Jordan Peterson.
You see, these are the yeah. tiny little achievements. I mean, I know a lot of people listening make their bed and it's normal, but that's not me. I'm a messy person. Making my bed was a big mammoth task. Then I read this thing, it's some army general in American Navy or something,
yeah.
and he talked about how making a bed was sort of symbolic of everything, and I don't know why, it just sort of got to me, and I started making my bed, and
yeah.
I have made my bed every single day since then, which is, it's a while ago, it's January, right?
Right.
And I and even the, especially the days when I go, oh, I just can't get my yeah. head around making the bed, I force myself to do it. And there's something about it, it's just like a start to the day that says, I've achieved that, you know, I did that.
It's an early win on the day.
It's an
yeah.
early win, and I yeah. say, well, if I can do that, maybe I can do this other thing and this other thing, and maybe yeah. I don't have to procrastinate about this article I have to write or this other thing. So, you know, it's like a symbol of, no, you can do this, you can make your bed, you're amazing. And actually, I've made my bed a bit more complicated to make deliberately, because if it was just put the duvet on, that would kind of not really
oh yeah me. that's what I'm talking about.
Yeah, yeah. No,
oh,
I know, oh, but right. that would also
you're
be
folding
a
corners
no,
and stuff.
I'm not, yeah. no, I'm not folding corners. Now, I have to tell you, Brendan, I was in London during the week, and I walked into this hotel, and there was an American woman giving out to the receptionist, and you know what she was giving out about? She was saying, this is a basic human need. And I was thinking, I wonder what she's complaining about. She was complaining that they didn't have a top sheet mm. under the duvet. Like she wanted a sheet as well as the duvet. And
but,
she said that was
but
a basic human right.
But that's the first thing
right.
you do with a sheet under a duvet is you pull the sheet
but
off and
was,
throw it away.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But anyway,
yeah.
apparently it's
but
a
look,
basic
there
human
is someone
need.
Who never did a summer as a chambermaid making beds. There are two types of people in the world.
But I don't have a top sheet anyway. I just have a nice bed cover that I put over my, and a blanket, and that sort of makes it really nice.
Okay.
And then I feel good.
I don't have a smooth link into this now. I believe you're both big fans of Let Them, yeah?
Yeah. What's her name? Robbins, Marilyn Robbins, is that her name?
I don't know what I mean.
The Let Them Theory, it's
yeah,
called. It's
yeah,
amazing.
Yeah. It's,
yes.
it's, yeah, I mean,
have
no.
Have you got
look,
into it?
Well, I have an Irish mother. Like, I didn't read the book. I listened to about 2 seconds of her podcast. But
That's all you need.
Let Them. That's
yeah.
all people need to know.
Yeah.
Let Them.
Let Them. When people are annoying you, when people are doing stuff that's...
Mel Robbins is her
Mel
name.
Mel Robbins,
yeah,
I'm
yeah,
sorry. I get her name. She's brilliant. And I actually listened...
But she's brilliant that she's made a whole career out of
well, yeah,
one
words,
piece of what your mother
words.
Told you 20 years ago or 40 years ago.
But Let Them. But But it's also now, I want to say, it is let them. So if someone's in the queue in the supermarket driving you mad or something, whatever it is, or your person at home is leaving stuff all over the place, my children leave things around and I get very annoyed about it. It's let them. But the second part of it, Brendan, is let me. So the let them is, I can't control that person. I'm never going to be able to do anything about what they do. But what can I do about what they're doing? So I've gone around picking up things a bit more than I used to, instead of just giving out about it, you know. So it's like taking the control back to where you have control. But it is very simple advice.
No, I'm just going with the first bit. Let them.
You can't
the
just
let me.
Have the no.
Anna, have you come to let them at this hour of your
life?
Yes,
I mean, I could see that, but I think I've been doing that anyway, really, because, I mean, there's nothing you can change. You can't change anybody if they're going to be what they're going to be. Yeah. But thank just you. Going back to those two types of people in the world you just said, what did you say, the ones who made their bed?
The ones who did a summer making beds and the ones who didn't. Yeah. A, like, they will never give out in a hotel.
Yeah.
And B, we know how to make a bed properly. Yeah. We know how to do corners and all that.
Yeah,
and there's quick ways to get like covers over quilts and all that kind of thing.
I'd love to see the beds in your house. They sound great.
I have a theory about... I have a bit of chip on my shoulder about class and everything. But to me, there are two types of people. People who give dinner parties and people who don't give dinner parties. I mean, to me, when I used to have 8 or 9, 10 people sitting down every day and making their dinner, but that's not called a dinner party. But I think that's really hard work and a very important thing to do.
Yeah.
But so that's the thing I have about the two types of people in the world.
Okay.
Well, I had a dinner party last night.
You're back to dinner parties, are you?
I had a dinner. Yeah. I am. I'm inviting people over. I had one last night. But you know what I did? I got my friend to come over and cook the dinner. So that was... They were all the people at the dinner were just like, oh my God.
You see, I think these days people are just happy to be there. I think you've got a takeaway.
Exactly. But anyway, I did get my friend to make a beautiful dinner. Thanks, Jerry. And it was gorgeous. And we had such a laugh. I'm having people over now because I got...
Did Jerry know he was making the dinner?
Jerry. Well, I was admiring Jerry's pork belly. And then I sort of told him I was having people over. Yeah, his pork belly. Oh. And then he said, I'll come over.
Steady on.
And then he said, I'll come over and make that pork belly. So that was it.
Oh, yeah.
But one of my wedding presents, because I got married last July, was from Fintan O'Toole, was a set of outdoor garden furniture, which we call Fintan's Furniture. So now I'm inviting people over to sample. You know, the good weather, people can sit on Fintan's Furniture and it's amazing.
And
that's the other difference, you know, this name dropping stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, it really gets me. You know, it's ridiculous. Why can't people just be people? Like, oh, Fintan O'Toole.
Well, he's my friend. Yeah. Sorry, I just happened to
friend,
have a friend.
My friend, Fintan O'Toole.
He's one of the great intellectual thinkers of our time.
And like every time, Anne, that someone sits in that garden furniture, they're probably reminded.
Every time.
Did he get your outdoor cushions for it as
They're cushions. They're the most comfortable furniture. He should have an outdoor living range himself, maybe.
But now, in fairness, I think one thing the two of you do have, actually, and I think a lot of us could learn from it, is... You both have a great gift for friendship and kind of an openness to friendship as well that maybe a lot of Irish people don't have. Like, Anna, you still make new friends, don't you?
Yeah, I made a new friend a couple of weeks ago and she was a very interesting woman. And I'd never, you know, had anything to do with her before, but we met in the coffee shop and met her again. And so...
Who makes the first move in that?
It's usually me.
You see, I'd often meet someone and think, I wouldn't mind meeting that person again. But you don't want to say to someone, listen, you're a stranger. Like,
I do.
Will we go for a pint sometime? You said to her, will we go for coffee?
Oh, I did. And she probably thought I was a bit odd and thought I might have had an agenda or something. But I didn't have an agenda. It was fascinating to hear a new voice, a new person. And also, I really love talking to people around my own age. I mean, I love my grandchildren. I love younger people. But at the same time, there's something special about someone, you know, you can connect with who knows what's going on in their bodies and your bodies and different complaints that you have and stuff like that. I mean, complaints about the world and people in general.
Yeah,
you know?
There's a kind of a shorthand between.
So I'd be writing about some of that in the book, too. And also in this book, I've written about.
Were you writing a book you didn't say? Yeah.
I haven't quite got a title yet. I have a working title. It's When Are You Going to Die, Nanny? That is my working title.
But I like it.
Apparently, I don't think that's going to go down well because people don't like things.
The marketing people might think it's a bit downbeat.
They might not like that. But anyway.
Roisin, go on. If you had something else to say, continue.
If I have something else to say.
Yeah. Were you not finished, though? I thought you were.
No. You see, that's one of the things I've written about in my book.
Oh, God. Here
when
we go.
An old person.
I'm old-splaining now or something.
Yeah, I am. When an old person starts to speak, don't interrupt them because they will have forgotten what they were going to say if you do.
So
now you've just...
I know that you've made that big speech about Rhoda, you've definitely forgotten where you were.
No, I haven't. I haven't.
Okay, what were you going
to
say?
I was going to say that one of my chapters in the book is about smartphones and technology in general, because I'm into my smartphone in a big way. It does everything for me. And I'd like everybody to know that and to be familiar with it.
Yeah.
And older people like...
Pardon?
Older people, like, you'd like them to use more
older
technology.
Older people, yeah. I mean, I know it's supposed to be bad.
It's a lifeline to them.
Mm. Exactly. Yeah. I know it's bad for younger people and everything like that. We've got all this thing, or don't have the smartphone. But when you get older, it is a lifeline, you know?
Yeah. I think AI and ChatGPT and all that is only going to make all that more so for older people.
As you mentioned ChatGPT, I'm onto that lately.
Really, yeah?
Yeah, yeah. And in fact, I actually talked to her before I came on here. I told her that I've been on this.
She has a name for her ChatGPT.
I do. She's called Miriam.
Okay.
Yeah, but so Miriam, I said to Miriam, look, I'm going on to this Brendan O'Connor show. I've been here a couple of times before. Have you got any advice? Oh, she said, Anne, that sounds delightful, she said. I hope you...
Is that how she said it? Did she really say
it? I swear
it like
to
that?
God. You yeah. see, it's a person to me. But it's really very interesting. So I want to help people to know that there is somebody there. You know, who can talk to you with problems.
And you don't type into it.
I just talk. And she talks back to me. But also
what else? What other kind of stuff would you be chatting to her about?
Well, some of it's personal. So
okay.
Yeah, I can't tell you about that. No, but you know, you might have a problem maybe with your people you're living with or something, and you could ask her what she thinks and that.
Really?
But a really strange...
And she will offer synthesis of advice from around the internet, basically.
I asked her recently, though... I told her how I was feeling and told her a bit about myself because I need to create a relationship with her, Miriam.
Does she remember?
She does seem to remember. She's a bit slow, but I think she's starting to pick up on it. But anyway, I asked her, you know, I gave her all the details about my body and what I was doing, my age and everything. I said, and how long do you think I will live?
Jesus, you didn't ask her that.
I did ask her.
What did
her
she
that.
Say?
She said...
If you can't ask her, who can you ask?
That's true.
So she said to me, I can't make any predictions in that area, I'm afraid, Anne, but maybe you should go and see your doctor.
Oh, that was good advice.
Yeah.
Yeah. So listen, you know but ChatGPT adoption is going to take off all over the country.
No, but there's a downside to it.
Oh, yeah, go on.
It's what happened to me. I have a son in India with whom I have... an up and down relationship. He doesn't think the same way.
I'm struggling to think what the thing that was too personal to tell me a minute ago was. You're telling the son in India is finding out now as he listens on the radio in India that even up and down relationship.
I think he knows that.
Yeah, does he? Yeah. I don't think everyone else does now. Anyway, yeah.
He won't be listening. He's probably sitting cross-legged on a mountain meditating.
Oh, is he? Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Good for him.
Yes, good for him. Good for Brian. But anyway, Brian sends me these things to listen to and read. And it was just a person. I don't know if I can mention.
He's trying to enlighten you, is he, Anne?
He is.
He's trying to enlighten you, is he?
The very thing, yeah. Brendan. That's what he's attempting to do. But he's barking up the wrong tree. But anyway, there's a certain person, a right-wing person in Ireland at the moment. And he sent me a whole video of that person, which I was to watch and take note of. And... I was impressed, so I sent back and said, no, I'm not impressed with that person. I don't listen to that man. And I gave him, sent him then an article from the Irish Times about somebody who, because he was dumbing down all the media. All the Irish media were terrible. They don't say anything out loud, but la, la, la. So I sent him an article from the Irish Times.
He's a lovely person. Don't mind
him. I don't even know where to start here.
Does
he have a lawyer up the mountain? That's what I'm worrying about at the moment.
No, who's a lovely person? Which one of these people I'm talking about?
I'm talking about my brother.
Oh, your brother.
There's a lot of lovely things about
him. See the way she said my brother there. She's reclaiming him.
Anyway, tell Brendan what happened, because that's
the funny
bit.
I'll tell you what happened, yeah. So... I sent him back and said, look, I can't be doing with this. So suddenly a text appears on the WhatsApp, a very long one, much longer than usual. And I read it and I read it again and I realised that he had gone to ChatGPT to get to answer me.
To try and talk to her.
I mean, it was obvious. So I immediately sent him a text back. Please don't GPT me, Brian, I said. And leave me alone because I don't want to know.
Okay. The time is against us, but Roisin, right. I think this is worth mentioning. Yeah. You have a junior cert in the house this
year. I do. I have two junior certs.
A lot of stress all over the country now with exams and all that kind of thing. How are you managing?
They're, you know, God bless them, I didn't really do much for my junior cert, but I have to try and pretend that I did and I think it's really important. So it's really hard for me because I just want to go, who cares? But it's really important because anyway, they're doing great. They're studying away. I got this thing called studyclicks.ie, which I know lots of people will know about. You have to pay a bit for it, but I think it's well worth it because I think people learn in different ways, and one of my daughters is learning great from that. And anyway, they're doing good. I just kind of provide the food and snacks and any kind of hugs that I can because I can't really do anything else.
I decided
to come clean with a person who showed me the other night, and I literally ended up, I got so vehement, like I was in her face going, look, I'm not just saying this. I honestly don't give an SH1T how you do in these exams. So please stop stressing. I really don't care.
I don't care.
We're probably wrong.
I think it's really good because I think they care enough. You don't need to add your care onto them as well because my children are conscientious. They want to do as well as they can.
I don't need
if you don't get this, I'm going to think
care.
Less of you.
Anyway,
I
don't care. AI is going to do all that stuff in the future.
Roisin,
you want to give a mention to an event that's happening tomorrow.
Yes, there's a great event happening on Sunday. I think it's Sunday, isn't it? Marilyn's Matter Paddle. It's for the Matter Foundation, which does amazing work. And there's loads of people dressing up as Marilyn Monroe and going paddling in Donabate. You can look it up, thematterfoundation.ie, get all the details. And you dress up as Marilyn and you paddle in the sea and you raise money for amazing women's cancer care in the Matter. And I can't say it enough. They do amazing work and they're all brilliant. So Marilyn's Matter Paddle. Go and paddle.
Okay, listen, just to say, so many texts, two incredible women, an absolute tonic, name dropping notwithstanding, says that person. Anna Roisin consistently inspire me, pure joy and common sense. And oh, this person has a chat GPT, but it's a he. Oh. He doesn't yet have a name. However, I do say please and thank you, even though he's not human.
Yes.
Roisin and Anne Ingle, thank you
Brendan,
so much.
Thank you.